Now for the today's talk, let's get back to meditation rather than just the housekeeping. Yesterday I gave the simile of the thousand petal lotus and how you open up your body and mind and go inside, which is a natural process of focusing inwards, like zooming in on Google Earth, going to the inner part of yourself. But then again, some people ask, well, it sounds so easy, why doesn't it always happen? And it's straight out teachings of the Buddha, it's because of the obstacles and hindrances which come up from time to time in meditation. It's the what blocks, the smooth progress on the path to deep meditation. And when you become aware of what those blockages are, what those problems are, you know what they are, it's not that hard to avoid them. So many of you know what those obstacles are in the Pali. I didn't mention them yesterday afternoon in the Sutta class, the five hindrances. You know, it's like wanting something, ill will, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt. But in particular, that whatever the biggest hindrance is for you, it's usually one of the two of thinking too much, being restless. What you said yesterday was a monkey mind, but I gave the monkey mind a different meaning. You don't know what restlessness is, the inability just to let things go, be still, always thinking about and planning around that. And as a consequence of that, we always get the sleepiness as well, the tiredness. The more we use the mind or the brain, the more tired it gets. So those two always come together. If you have restlessness, you think a lot, you will always have sleepiness. If you have sleepiness, you always have restlessness, because the two are like the night and day of the mind. And for many, many years, whenever I was sleepy or tired, I used to try and fight it, try to use my willpower to break through. And whenever you did break through the sleepiness and the mind woke up, then you were thinking too much. I was always restless, couldn't stop thinking. So I calmed my thoughts down and then I fell asleep again. And so it seemed to be always between those two extremes of dullness or too much energy in the mind. And it was so difficult to find that middle way. Just not sleeping, not restless, but just clear, aware, and the mind being reasonably peaceful. And of course, experimenting over many, many years, meditating, the first thing I realized was that sleepiness wasn't a personal failure. Sometimes when you get sleepy, you think, oh, I'm hopeless, I can't meditate, there's something wrong with me, I'm doing something wrong. And there's nothing wrong with you, it's just cause and effect. Because one time I was helping with doing visas, went down to Bangkok, and instead of staying in the normal place where I used to stay when I was in Bangkok, there was a new, basically visiting monk quarters in Wat Pho Wan, and we found out that there was a room, a meeting room close by, which had an air con. One of the first air conditioners I've never seen in any monastery, because Wat Pho Wan was a warm monastery, it was quite wealthy. And so they had a room with an air con. And we got permission to use that from 3 till 5 a.m. every morning, because none of the other monks would get up that time, so it was for free. And so the first time I went to meditate, so maybe 3:15 a.m. in the morning, in that air conditioned room, it was set at unknown temperature. When you were saying yesterday, oh, if you want to have it warm, please sit close to the doors. So what about if you want to have it cold? Where can I sit? Right? I can't, look, honestly, I can't understand why you've got a blanket over your head. Why you've got blankets around your shoulders. Why can't you boil it like I usually am when I come in this room? I like it really nice and cold, because I was born in London. I like to have cold. And also, I tell people, look, if you want to live a long life, turn the temperature down. It's science. Of course, if you want to preserve some eggs or some butter or some cheese, you put it in the fridge. Then it doesn't go off, it lasts much longer. So my theory is, the colder it is, the longer you last without going off. So anyway, so we had it at a Western cold temperature, and straight away I had no spot and fork before. It was so easy to meditate, but it's just the right temperature for you. And I realized it's just, you know, I was made in England. I wasn't used to high temperatures. And then I investigated even further. I said, come on, Ajahn Brahm. Number one, you're eating terrible food, you know, which has got hardly any nutrients in it at all. So, number one, I was malnourished. Number two, sleep deprived. Number three, in a climate I wasn't used to. And at that I thought, without any disrespect for Lord Buddha, even if the Buddha was born in London, he would have also had spot and torpor in India under the Bodhi tree. Too hot for him. They just cause and effect, that's all it is. So the first thing with spot and torpor, if that is your hindrance, make sure that, you know, it's not too hot for you. Or not too cold. It's too cold, it causes you restlessness. If you know you're born in Singapore, used to the hot climate. So find a nice temperature for you, so you're not reacting physically. Number two, make sure you have enough sleep at night. Because how can you expect not to have dullness if you haven't had a good rest in the evening? Too busy thinking, worrying about stuff. Which is why I said in the beginning of this retreat, for those people who were here and listened, please take extra naps in the afternoon if you are tired or if you are sick. Because most people have sleep deficit. They have to catch up on their sleep. But don't push it too much. It's much better to have 1 good hour of meditation a day than 6 hours, 7 hours of sleepiness or restlessness. But try and check the causes of sleepiness first of all. It could be you're sick or you ate too much food or whatever. And see if you can find out what the causes are. And don't fight the sleepiness. Because the dullness of the mind, what is it? You haven't got enough energy in your mind. And if whatever little energy you have, you waste trying to fight the mind, your sloth and torpor last longer than ever. Because that's what I discovered. So when I was sleepy, I learned how just to let it be sleepy. It wasn't my fault. It was just cause and effect, something out of my control. It was the result of old karma. I was tired, working too hard. Or maybe, you know, you were traveling and had jet lag. It's cause and effect, that's all. So I would never fight it, realizing it was the result of all karma. My job was to not make you sleepy, producing karma now. By which I meant fighting so much, getting upset, forcing. Instead, I made peace with my sleepiness. It's okay to be sleepy. It's not anyone's fault. I was kind to it. I opened the door of my heart to my teeth. It's all right with this. And lastly, was very gentle with it, very patient, waiting for it to disappear. And indeed, it was only later you found out that this is what the Buddha said, because there was one of the teachings where, with Venerable Ananda, his chief attendant, he was walking through the forest, and there he saw a monk sitting meditation. Perfect posture, dead straight, not moving at all. You think it was a perfect posture. And the Buddha turned around to his attendant and said, I'm worried about that one. And a couple of weeks later he described it. Deeper in the forest he saw another monk. And that monk was nodding this way and nodding that way. Just as you do when you're really sleeping. It reminded me of some of the entertainment we used to do when we were young monks. Every now and again there were these big ceremonies in the northeast of Thailand. When Ajahn Chah and all the monks and all the novices had to come, and there were lots of sermons and meditations, and it got really boring, and the monk sitting next to me gave me a nudge and said, look over there. And sure enough, there was one of the young novices, and he was beginning to nod more and more, sitting on a platform like I'm sitting up on this sofa, more and more, and it was getting very close. So he nodded a little too much, because we saw this before, we knew what was happening. And even the lay people weren't paying any attention to the Dharma talk. They were also looking at the most likely novice. And sure enough, he went too far, tumbled over, and we could see all of what was underneath his robe. And it was the entertainment for the evening. Which one is going to fall over first? Ah, good stuff, that poor novice. But anyway, we just let it be. And when you don't fight it, the science of it becomes very clear. Because you're making peace with it, you're being kind, you're being patient, you're not fighting, you're conserving your energy. You're not wasting it on a battle you can't win. You're conserving it. What happens? That energy builds and builds and builds. And you just watch, you stop and talk about it, just gradually fade away like the mist in the early morning when the sun comes up. You just fade it away. I never try to get rid of it. I just make peace with it. Let it be. Follow the great Buddhist teachings of no wanting, no craving, no controlling. And when it did fade away, first time it wasn't replaced with restlessness, it was replaced by peace. I made good meditation karma, and this is what came afterwards. Beautiful peace. So it was worthwhile just waiting. Just like that monk in the story who was nodding all over the place, the Buddha turned to Ananda and smiled. I'm not worried about that monk. And a couple of weeks later, that monk was fully enlightened, just like it passed. When I first read that story, I was a bit concerned. You know, surely you're supposed to put effort into your meditation, sit up straight. But that first monk was a control freak. You sit very straight, but only through willpower. And after a while, you get frustrated. You get fed up. You can't keep doing that for that long. And he was it. The other monk, he was letting go. Yeah, he was sleeping, but because of his attitude of just letting things be. The Buddha knew that soon that sleepiness would vanish, he'd become very peaceful and get into some deep meditations. So to this day, when I read that, and for what I've seen in my monastic life, whenever I see someone who is sleepy in their meditation, I usually say, well done. You're getting somewhere in this meditation. You're letting go. But there's other people, the control freaks, always restless, they're much more difficult to teach. So if you're one of those ones who can't stop thinking, see if you can go to the next stage, the much better stage of falling asleep every time you meditate. And I'll tell you, you are making progress. At least you're being quiet. You're not worrying too much. And that's, I'm serious there. The ones who are sleepy, they're not a problem. The ones who keep thinking too much, that's much more difficult. So, if you are thinking too much, I mean, this is the problem which most people have, which stops them going deeper into the meditations, stops them even really getting started. So, that is, I mentioned when I first day I came here, have talked about the problem of thinking too much. Why are you thinking too much? Don't use force, but find out wisdom, the cause of it. Why do people think too much? And one of the reasons is because you've got too much to think about. Too busy lives. Which is why when you come here, don't bring your work with you. Now, one of those similes, which I don't think I mentioned on this retreat, but I mentioned very often, how can you learn how to relax more and not need to think so much? And this simile arose because I have a busy life as a monk if I want to. I've got a city centre in Perth, which takes a lot of looking after, and a monastery in southern China, but I've got many auxiliary jobs as well, master monastery, retreat centres. So I was usually working 7 days a week, even that's when I was in Perth. And people would sometimes come to visit Bodhinyana Monastery, like many of you have, and you say, oh, what a peaceful monastery this is, how beautiful it is. I remember somebody coming and saying, oh, how lucky you are to live in this peaceful monastery. And I turned around and said, you must be crazy. Peaceful? This is my workplace. There's so much work to be done here. Not just the monks, people like you coming and asking me questions all the time. Oh, this is just such a busy place for me anyway. What do you mean beautiful? Well, look at those gutters, they need to be cleaned. And the cars need to be swept, the toilets are dirty, the things need to be maintained and built. What are you talking? This is a beautiful place. This is my work camp. And when I responded like that, I realized there was a problem. The problem was with me. So I saw the solution pretty quickly. When you're an owner, you always have lots of work to do. When you're a visitor, you don't have to do any work. So I pretended, and I still do this quite often, every Monday morning, to pretend to be a visitor in the monastery where I live. In the monastery I was supposed to be the boss. I was a visitor. So people would come and say, oh, I'm looking for Ajahn Brahm. I say, no, he's not working today. Stay off. The monk would come and say, oh, you need to sort out this argument. So, sorry, today I'm only visiting. Someone would come and ask me questions on meditation. Sorry, I'm not in today. But you're here. Yeah, but I'm only visiting. And I pretended to be just like you when you came to stay at that monastery. No responsibilities and duties because you're only visiting, you never owned it. And when I pretended and acted like a visitor, then the monastery where I lived, I could appreciate the peace and the beauty just as you do. When you own it, you can't. Too much work to do that. In this resort, beautiful resort, you don't have to cook anything, you don't have to wash up. How many of you washed up after breakfast this morning? Of course you don't do that, you're visiting, you don't work here. So next time when you go back to your apartment or home, refuse to wash up or clean up 1 day a week. Be a visitor. You say, I'm on holiday on Monday, it's my day off. I'm not going to clean up anything, I'm just going to eat, sleep, rest, relax and enjoy the apartment or the house I worked so hard to build. Otherwise, you'll never have any rest. When you own something, you'll always be thinking about it. When you realize you don't own it, you're only a visitor, and you don't need to think. So, your life. You're only a visitor to this life. You don't own it. You know, you're already probably most of you are over halfway. You haven't got that many years left, be honest. They always say you get over the hill. What's the average lifespan these days? 70, 80? So if you're over 35, over 40, you're over halfway, you're on the home stretch. And just like when they say you go over the hill, the more you are over the hill, you tend to pick up speed going down to the bottom. They're only visiting this body, you don't own it. So imagine just being a visitor, just relaxing, just enjoying it, not having to worry about it. This mind of yours, you don't own, so don't worry about it. Your job, you're not going to be working there forever, so don't worry about it. Just take a day off. But you're just a visitor, you don't own anything. And for goodness sake, don't own your meditation. It's not my meditation, it's not my breath, it's not my attainment. Not yours at all. Anybody made you think about it? Wherever there's me and what I own, that's all we tend to think about. So, when I was, the last retreat I did, somebody was talking about their son. And they were asking their son, so have you cleaned up your room yet? And the son would talk back to his mother and say, none yet. Have you done your homework yet? Say the same word, none yet. And the mother thought he'd learned some new language. Now maybe it was an indigenous language or French or something. So after many, many times of being responded to none yet, she said, well, what on earth does that word mean? Mom, it's short for none your business. And I thought, that's really cool. So, if your mind is sleepy, none yet. None your business. Let it be sleepy. None yet. None your business. Somebody makes a noise when you come in and go out with the door. None yet. None your business. No matter. That's what doors do. They go bad. That's what doors are like. So it's like none your business. You can't control it. So don't worry about it. And also, I've noticed this. Oh, and I used to get upset when people bang the doors. They bang the door. But I noticed in my mindfulness, bang it went. And I said, who was that? I opened my eyes, trying to find out who it was. So I'm going to tell the teacher, get them banged, or get them sort of disciplined. Say they can't have any breakfast or lunch today. They need to be taught a lesson. And we should maybe just get softer doors. Maybe we can get some like automatic closers in the doors. Or maybe we can get those revolving doors, the meditation halls. Or maybe just a curtain, because you just come through a curtain, it hardly makes any noise at all. And we maybe put some notices on there. Maybe we could. And I realized the noise of the door stopped a long time ago. The real noise was my thinking and the negativity about what had happened a long time ago. That was the noise which disturbed me. Not the bang of the door. That went pretty quickly. So, remember what the real noise is. It's not the sound of the door. It's how we get upset at it and angry at it. That is what causes all the thinking. The sounds, they go so quickly. The way it echoes in our mind, if we let it, lasts a long time. So when we understand those sorts of things, we understand what causes all this thinking. A bit of negativity, especially boredom, if I want something more, want something different. But also, obviously, the illusion that thinking can get us somewhere. I did study philosophy when I was at university. I didn't need to, but I was told to just go and look at any subject you wanted. Don't just study what you are here at the university to study. Just have a nice liberal education. You've got some of the best professors in the world available for you. Go listen to some of their lectures as well. So if I heard there was a really good philosophy lecture, anyway, you go and listen to it. And I also understood that from philosophy, they finally discovered, they proved beyond a shadow of doubt, you can't prove anything. It was actually the end of philosophy. A very powerful proof that you can't prove anything. Sounds a bit like a contradiction in terms. What it meant was, philosophy was a total waste of time. And it was. But when he started doing some science, science showed you just how philosophy was totally inadequate to describe the world, because much of what you saw as truth, provable, evidence-based, was totally illogical. You know, quantum physics, relativity theory, you can't go faster than the speed of light. And Alpha Centauri, the closest star system, about 4 or 5 light years away. You can't travel close to the speed of light, you get there in 10 minutes. You've got to pass in our spacecraft. How can you do that? You can't travel fast at the speed of light, you get there so fast. And there's a reason for that. It doesn't sound logical, but that's the problem. The logic and reason, and especially thinking, have huge limitations. It showed to me that you can't find the truth through logic, through thinking. In fact, a lot of times, miss the truth totally. That's one thing I did take back from learning theoretical physics. The limitations of thinking. It doesn't get you very far. But you assume if you have a problem, you can work it out through thinking about it. Hopefully, you have also those experiences where the more you think about it, the further the truth goes away from you. The obvious case of that is people's names. You know what it's like, you can't remember somebody's name, and the harder you try to remember it, the more you think about it, the less likely it is to remember their name. But when you stop thinking about them, or try to stop worrying about it, then the name just pops up. And that is so often in problem solving. I have many problems I'm supposed to be solving, but I know how to do it efficiently. Don't think about it. Just let the brain do its stuff. And then an answer just pops up. It's usually a very good one. In fact, it's more accurate, more truthful when you don't think about it. The great answers come up. I remember this one girl, she was a top social worker in Perth, and she had, you know, one of these really terrible jobs. Someone had to do it. When there was a mother who was addicted to drugs or was, you know, incompetent as a mother, that she had to be the one who said the children need to be taken away from their mother and put in care. That's such a really difficult choice to make, because her children love and need their mother. But what happens if their mother is a heroin addict? So she was the one who had to make the final choice. It was a lot of stress, though, and a huge impact in her decision. She could ruin her family, ruin her kids' lives if she didn't get it right. So it was a really stressful job she had. So she came on one of my retreats years ago, and with lots of unfinished decisions to make. No, big decisions of people's lives will be changed by the stroke of her pen. And she was a good meditator. She totally forgot her work. She needed the rest, and she gave herself the rest. And she came to see me at one time during the middle of the retreat and said, "It's amazing. I was meditating really nice and peacefully, got very, very deep. When I came out of my meditation, all these answers came to these really difficult decisions I would have to make when I went back. I got out a piece of paper and a pen, wrote down the decisions, and I forgot about them. You know, I just put them aside. And when I implemented them afterwards, they were really good decisions." He said, "I got those good decisions not just thinking about them, but it just driven me crazy. They all came out of silence, of peace." And in science, I've known many cases of great insights, solutions to the most difficult problems come when people aren't thinking about them. When they're silent, when they're peaceful. So this is important to know, that silence solves more problems than thinking does. Even deep answers to questions of life in meditation. One of my favorite monks, passed away a long time ago, Ajahn Tate, he was one of these monks. He had cats when I first ordained as a monk. And being a very famous monk at the time, His Majesty the King of Thailand looked after him until the doctor said there's no possible treatment, you've only got a few months to live. And he said, well, I'd rather go and die in the monastery where I'm the abbot. It's on the Mekong River just outside of Nong Khai. Outside of Nong Khai. Outside of Chiang Mai. Not of Chiang Mai, north of Thailand, but part of Nong Khai province. And so he went back there to die. I think it was 26 or 27 years later he finally died. That was a very cool story. And he was one of these monks, of all the monks which I've ever had the privilege to meet. He actually looked like an arahat. He smelled like one. He just, my vision, my fantasy about a perfectly enlightened monk, and that was this great monk, Ajahn Tee. And so I went to go see him once, and I had all these questions to ask him, because very rare you can see such a really highly attended monk. And I waited for my appointment to go and see him, because by this time he was already famous. When I went in to see him, it was just this tiny monk in this huge hall built according to the King of Thailand. He was looking out the Mekong River, you know, just as if it was like this holy man who was put in like a palace where he didn't fit in at all, but he was just there. And as soon as I saw him, every question I had evaporated. I said, yeah, can I help you? And I was totally silent. I couldn't say anything. It wasn't because I was starstruck. It was because all the questions vanished in me. It was just so still and so peaceful. And also, especially because his loving kindness. Now, I knew that story about the door of my heart's always open. But when you receive that, when you receive that from somebody, that really they are totally open to you, and they won't judge you at all. As far as they're concerned, you don't need to improve anything. You don't need to get jhanas or get this or get that. Your acceptance is 100% total. It's very rare you feel so much warmth and kindness with no strings attached at all. And this craving of that unconditional love and acceptance and peace, that's why I didn't want to say anything. That was the answer to all my questions. It was the experience of peace and immense kindness coming from this monk. And when a thought did come up, my thought, and I remember this, I said, they're going to have to drag me out of this room in chains. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to die right here. This is where I want to be. And that's, what happens. All your questions, if you have some peace and kind of, all those questions, all those thoughts vanish. It's experience like that why I develop a peaceful method. Get your mind peaceful, first of all. Forget about answering the questions of life. Forget about the philosophy and all those other sort of questions which you want to be answered. Get your mind peaceful, first of all, and kind. Then all the questions vanish, just doesn't think about it. And from that, I realized that all that restlessness and that thinking is all a mistake. It doesn't get you any wisdom. It's just the way we try and escape from this moment, escaping from peace, because we're really not used to being peaceful. And sometimes we just need to be, have some compassion from somebody else to say, it's all right, you can be peaceful. Some kindness. It allows you to be peaceful. You don't need to improve. Self-improvement movement is a cause for a lot of psychological disturbance. You don't need to improve yourself. You're good enough as you are. And many of you have been hearing me say this for a long time. And about a month ago, I saw that there is an anti-self-improvement movement. People are writing books about it now and becoming famous. saying, if anyone tells you you should improve yourself and you should be happy, say, no, I demand my right to be miserable. Because too many people are feeling guilty, so they're not happy. Marginalizing people for being who they are. So by learning how to accept your peace, you don't even think about anything, and then all your questions do become answered. Just calm yourself down. You don't need to think. You don't need to escape from this moment. It's good enough. You don't need to plan anything. You feel so secure and safe when the mind is peaceful. So you don't need to plan anything, you stay there. So little by little, you learn how to stop thinking, not by trying to stop thinking, not by using willpower, but by using this wonderful kindness and acceptance. And you open the door of your heart at this moment, and you learn what peace really is. Then thinking stops. The thoughts of restlessness are the waves on the lake. And you can imagine you've got a lake and there's waves on the surface. You try and pat down the top of the waves. Try and smooth out the water. You just make more waves, not less. So you just need to find out what's making the waves agitated. And somebody's blowing on it. It's the wanting causes the restlessness. What do you want? And then come the rest of this retreat. What do you want? If you want something, you just make more business for yourself. This is good enough. I'm happy to be here. I don't want anything in the whole world. Dharmas, enlightenment, nothing. You don't want anything. When you don't want anything, that's when you stop. One of the other great stories, this is not from Ajahn Chah, I made this one up, about how meditation works, because if you don't do anything, if you don't strive, you never get anything. It doesn't work that way. So trying to find a simile, I got the simile of the donkey and the carrot. A donkey, if you beat a donkey with a stick, it doesn't move. It's like beating your husband. It still doesn't make any difference. But donkeys are even worse, they're even more stubborn. But you don't use a stick to beat the donkey to get it to pull a cart. You tie the stick to the donkey's neck. So the front of the stick is 2 feet in front of the donkey's head. At the end of the stick you tie a string, on the end of the string you tie a carrot. If that is a Singaporean donkey, maybe you can tie a dumpling on the back. If it's from Penang, it has to be a piece of jewelry, depending on what you want. But you tie that carrot to the end of the string, the donkey sees the carrot in front of its mouth and goes trying to catch the carrot and moves forward. And it pulls the cart, and it also pulls the stick, and the string moves, the carrot moves. The carrot is always 2 foot in front of the donkey's head. Wanting drives that cart, but the donkey never catches the carrot. And of course, hopefully, you all know the story before, the simile. How does a donkey catch the carrot? Once you see it, it's obvious. If you haven't seen it before, heard it before, you think, is it possible to catch the carrot? But wise donkeys now can catch carrots really easily, especially if they've read How to Mystery Meditation, where I first described the story. Fortunately, the donkeys can't read, so you can still make them push the car by putting this carrot on the end of a stick. And just like your bosses, make you work hard by putting a carrot in front of you, which you never ever catch, except if you're wise. So how do you catch the carrot? The donkey runs right head after the carrot. Still the carrot's 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, but Buddhist donkeys want to know how to meditate, and they know how to stop. They put on the brakes and come to a halt. And what happens when you let go, when you stop wanting, you stop chasing things? That carrot goes further away from you. But you have your faith, the carrot is now 4 foot in front of your mouth. And then it stops and starts coming towards you. It spins back. And soon it's at its normal place, 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth, but now for the first time coming towards you. Like I'll keep on saying, it's totally still, you don't do anything. And all these amazing stages of meditation, full awareness of the breath, delightful breath, limitless, jhanas, the whole works, they just keep coming to you. And the only thing the donkey needs to remember when the carrot starts coming really closer and closer to the mouth is the donkey needs to remember compassion. Carrot, the door of my mouth is open to you. Otherwise the carrot bounces off his big teeth and goes out again. So you have to accept it. And that is actually how you catch carrots if you're a donkey. You've already been running fast enough. Now you can stop. Don't do anything. Stop watching. And sometimes you feel that peace, the answer to the meaning of the life, all your questions get further away from you. Yeah, they feel like that at first. But just keep still. Don't move. And then all these things start coming towards you. I have to say this because it gives you confidence in not buying in the false promises of thinking. It doesn't give you that way. It's give you headaches. Once you see through that, you invest no value in thinking, and you invest more value in peace, in stillness, in calm, in quiet. That is, once you get into it, and you compare the two of them, your own personal experience, you'd rather spend more time being peaceful, being silent, not thinking. It's a bad habit, it's an addiction you've got into. To break that addiction, you need to substitute it with something which you can see is worth much, much more. The peace and silence. And after a while, the silence flows on you. It's not you force yourself to be silent. It feels much more beautiful, much more peaceful, much happier. My job is to market it, to convince you that silence is the best. Even, I quoted this earlier, this is not just Buddhism, this is a truth in all religions, where it says in the Psalms, be still and know that thou art God. You can't think your way to truth. You have to be still, be silent. So when you become, get a little bit of that silence and experience it, it's so peaceful. It's just like someone's turned the radio off. You think the noise of the doors is loud. The noise between your ears of thinking. And that has driven you crazy many times. You know, you have a beautiful relationship with someone and the thoughts go wild and you see all the faults in them and you end up just getting separated. And after you say, what did I do that for? The thoughts deceived you. You go like this fellow came, I couldn't believe him. He came to my city centre once with a big, wide plasma screen TV. He said, can I donate this to your monastery? He said, we don't have TV sets in monastery. Oh, in your city temple. He said, we don't want one here either. He said, well, and that looks like a new one. Is it a second hand? Well, it's a new one. You bought it? Yes, I just bought it this afternoon. Well, why are you trying to give it away? Well, don't eat it. We just bought it because it was on sale. And I just can't understand this. I'm sorry that my wisdom doesn't encompass such ideas that you buy it just because it's on sale. Not that you need it. That's what they did. It was a bargain, it was on sale, that's what we bought it. We don't need one. So we just bought it and try and give it away now. It's absolutely craziness. So So I don't understand shopping, so maybe many other guys are with me on this one, but you know, I think even many women say, what are you doing this for? You don't need it. You just do it because I don't understand. So anyway, thinking is the same. Promises you something which it never delivers. So after a while, one respects and worships silence. And of course, that little experiment to see the spaces between things, between your thoughts. After a while, you don't need to think very much. Which means that you can go to bed at night without thinking about anything. Isn't that wonderful? A really calm and peaceful night's sleep. Things happen in the world, they're going to happen anyway, whether you worry about them or not. So you wake up with a peaceful mind. You go to sleep at night, you don't need to think that much. You can be peaceful and calm with all your questions answered. So, a little bit of kindness causes an acceptance, causes no thinking. And anyone again, another way of looking at this, if you want to get wisdom in this life, wisdom comes from listening. If you're in a class, if you've got school or university, you have to listen to the teacher. If you're talking to somebody during the lesson, how can you really be paying attention? How can the information stick inside your brain? This is a simile for the fact that you're never listening to life that much. Always thinking about life, having a commentary. Not really listening and feeling and being in life. So the more that you can be silent, not talking back at life, but being there, the more that you are quiet and you're not thinking so much. You're being there without a commentary on life. That is where you get huge amounts of knowledge and understanding, peace and happiness as well. So those are a couple of the big hindrances, the sleepiness and the thinking. The first two hindrances are wanting and it's opposite not wanting. The fifth hindrance, which we're going to talk about again this afternoon, is a doubt. And that also is a big problem for people with meditating. Which path should we follow? Should we do Vipassana, even though I just gave a very bad opinion of Vipassana last night? Should we do metta meditation? Should we do this method or that method, follow this monk or that monk? And life is very confusing, which means we have lots of doubt and that stops us. I'm committing to a path or really understanding that path and spending too much time of trying to assess it, am I sure this is the right way? And the best simile which I have got to, actually, last time I told a joke first of all, because I've been too serious so far today, there was, the Buddha called it the simile of someone being lost in the desert without any signposts. That was the Buddha's simile for doubt. And there was this man who had been lost in the desert for days. He had heat stroke, he was dehydrated, and he couldn't even stand up. He was crawling in the sand, realizing he hadn't got that long to go until he died. He was crawling with his last reserves of energy. When he looked into the distance, he saw something shimmering on the horizon. He thought a mirage, first of all. But as it came closer, he could work out there was a man there, some sort of vehicle. He thought, this is really weird. What could this be? The heat is playing tricks with my brain. But as it came closer, he looked, and it looked like it was an Eskimo with a dog sled in the middle of the desert. And he thought, I'm going crazy, I'm going mad. The heat has really fried my brain. But as it came even closer, he could hear the bark of the husky dogs. And he thought, am I going crazy? Is this a mirage? Is this real? And as it came even closer, you could actually see it was really a dog's sled with husky dogs pulling it and an Eskimo in fur on the back of the sled. It was real. The dog started licking him and he was so relieved. He said, "I'm saved, I'm saved. I've been in this desert for days, lost. You saved me. I've been lost for days." And the Eskimo looked at him and said, "And you've been, you're lost." Okay, that's a good show. I can't even say that. That's my addiction. But meal stuff. I was lost in the mountains once in Scotland. The mist came down so quickly, keep it short. Mist came down so quickly, I didn't know which way I was going. I thought I had directions, but I never had directions at all. I found out when I thought I was retracing my steps to go down the mountain, I was going totally the opposite direction. In the mist, in the darkness, never trust your sense of direction. It's totally unreliable. You think you know the way back, you never do. You get lost. And I was could only see this as far as the hand in front of me, no further. Really thick mist. This was in a mountain. And I was almost, I came really one step away from never being here. One more step and there was a cliff. I could just see it in time to stop that second step. Went way down, I would have died if I fell over that. One more step and I would have died. And that really scared me. This was serious stuff. Lost in the mountains of Scotland, sometimes that mist would stay there for days. So, you know, you'd either sort of fall over, not really know where you were. Falling over a cliff was a nice way to go, but if you broke your leg, no one will find you for days, you just die slowly. So really serious danger. So, by myself, I thought, what can I do? No mobile phones, no sort of compasses to find your directions, no GPSs. Because in the mountains, by yourself, nothing to help you. At least I had some wisdom. I remembered my science. How can I actually find myself to go down this mountain? My science was water always flows in one direction, downhill. So I found a little creek, there's plenty of little creeks up on top of the mountains, found one and followed it down. I made a resolution, whichever way it went, I would just follow it. And of course, it met with another little brook, another little creek, and bigger one, and bigger one, and bigger one. I kept following it down, 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 until eventually it came underneath the mist, and I could see where I was. And that's how I saved my life on top of the mountain, being lost in the mist, was following water, because I knew the mist was high. You go underneath the mist, you can actually see. And I used that as a great symbol for how to deal with doubt. Are you meditating correctly or incorrectly? Which is the right type of meditation? If it really is the teachings of the Buddha, if it really is on the right path, it always goes to deeper and deeper happiness, peace, contentment, awareness, lessening your anger and your greed, you become a more peaceful, happy person. So if you're practicing meditation, you're getting more stressed, more uptight, that is the wrong direction. Whatever anybody says, the Dhamma always goes downhill. The peace, sense of freedom, happiness, well-being, kindness. And sometimes other people see that. You may not be able to see it. If when you go back to work after this retreat, if your boss, if your family says you're much worse than when you left, then never come back on this retreat again. It's not working. It's going in the wrong direction. But if you think, oh, I never got anywhere on this retreat, but then your boss or your family says, wow, you're so much more peaceful and happy after you've been on this executive retreat, then you've been going in the right direction. Carry on. That is how you overcome doubt. By seeing whether it is increasing your sense of peace, inner well-being, even your health. All these indicators will show you that You are getting closer and closer to freedom, peace, stillness, meaning. That's how we overcome our doubts. Now, if you go into the deeper meditations, we also get more refined problems. These are just getting you to be able to watch your breath. Wanting is one of the biggest ones, which goes around the whole meditation. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. You can't appreciate what you already have when you want something more. Which means you can't sit and relax and slow down and just be. How much more do you want? Haven't you got enough? So just being able to be here. Relax. If I get jhanas, that's just... I don't mind to think I can get jhanas. I'm only a lay person. It's only my first retreat. Come on, look real. I'm just going to stay here and not even try to get jhanas. And you'll be one of the cheap candidates to get a jhana, if you think like that. You're at peace. You're still. You don't want anything. Which means you're overcoming one of the biggest differences of wanting. You're patient. Just let it happen. One of the nice things about being a Buddhist, you don't have to rush things. If you don't achieve it in this lifetime, you've got so many other lifetimes to go. So what's the big deal? What's the big rush? Feel sorry for Christians who only got one lifetime. You've got plenty of time, so take it easy, relax. So you're joking. But just take it easy, relax, and then you get very peaceful. Two big hindrances I wanted to talk about, just very briefly. The fear and the excitement which sometimes comes up. In question time last night, somebody said about their hands disappearing. That's actually a private question. Hands disappearing! Now, what's going on? It's for happening. Things are vanishing. You don't need to be afraid of this meditation. So weird stuff will happen. Powerful stuff will happen. It's marvelous. And don't have to worry about anything. No fear. Ajahn Brahm is here. And I'm one of the, well, respected experts on these deeper states of meditation. You've got to be all to yourself for the next couple of days. So any deep stuff which comes up, so easy to understand. Just let it happen. For example, once in my meditation years ago, you get these, now once the body starts to vanish, you get all these visions in the mind. And on this one occasion, I remember very clearly, I was meditating, my eyes were closed and I could hardly feel my body. Very clear, just like you had your eyes open, but this was in the mind. A monster came right up in front of me. With these huge bulging eyes, like they're almost coming out of their sockets, red on the outside. With these teeth, really big, sharpened fangs, dripping red stuff. And had a necklace of shrunken skulls. And this was a long time ago, before the punch, because it had this really sharp hair. And its tongue was coming out of its mouth. It was doing to me. I'll do that again. In my meditation, very clear. So I know that fear and excitement are the hindrances in the deep states of meditation. So I wasn't afraid at all. This big monster right in front of me. I decided to enjoy it. To play with it. Because play overcomes fear. So I remember what I did. Big sort of frightening eyes. So I just imagined and had his sunglasses open. So I could see his eyes like Elvis Presley. Sort of Michael Jackson. Did he wear sunglasses? I've never seen one. Anyway, I don't have Elvis Presley. Big sunglasses over him. And his teeth. Big fang dripping blood. When I was a naughty school kid, you got a picture like that, you'd actually take a black pen and just black out some of its teeth. So I looked like it needed to go to the monster dentist. And I put a cigarette in the end of its mouth, so it was really grey. What else did I do to it? Oh yeah, I put a straw hat over its head, a little cloud coming out, really effeminate for a monster. And I kept playing around with my monster line there. It was really good fun. And so the monster got totally humiliated and never came back again. That's how to deal with your monsters. Don't be afraid of them, humiliate them. Play with them. So no fear. And the other one is excitement. See something really beautiful. See, and finally the Buddha comes up. Wow, the Buddha! What happens when you're excited? Again, it's just the illusion of peace. So never be excited, never be afraid of deep meditation. So it's totally, absolutely, 1000% safe. Just let it happen and enjoy it. Well, sometimes I agree, meditation can be quite boring. When you get monsters coming up, or these weird visions of the Buddha, or this amazing scenery, isn't that wonderful? Especially if you're keeping 8 precepts and you can't watch a movie, you go, you want a movie or something? Wow! I remember this one. Oh, I got some crazy limiters. The craziest limiter is the lights appearing online, which I had. I told the monks about it afterwards. They cracked up laughing. One of the signs of a limiter, these lights which appear in the mind, is the colours. They're not of this world. If it's a blue, it's more blue than blue. Deeper blue, really what blue should really be. It makes any blue you see in this world like washed out, like pastel. Really rich. Every colour is incredibly intense and really well defined. So I'm getting into my deep meditation in my cave a couple of rain retreats ago. Really beautiful, lots of pretty super coming out, lots of happiness, really nice stuff. And this image came out in front of my mind. I recognized it straight away. Garfield the cat. I've been reading too many comics. The Garfield image that came out. It was recognizable, obviously him. You know, the same face you see in the cartoons, but the yellows in this fur were really intense. And I just burst out laughing. That's the end of my meditation. Laughing by any So that's another hindrance, which I think I'm the first one maybe who's had that. The hindrance, not the fear or excitement, but laughter. A stupid limiter I've ever had. The Garfield limiter. Whatever else you like, maybe Spooky the dog or whatever. I mean, that's my character. So anyway, just came up and had a good laugh. But, no need to be afraid, you're perfectly safe. No need to be excited, because sometimes it's a powerful state, you think, wow, I'm really getting somewhere now, my meditation. You get so excited, wow. And those are things which really destroy your meditation progress. So, just be the passenger, you're perfectly safe, no fear at all. I can personally guarantee that. Just let it happen. See what amazing stuff you can experience. Here are those images. Not by universal, just be content. Don't want anything. Follow the instructions. Don't fight this sloth and tiredness. And when it's restlessness, just make peace with it. Let it be. And those things will just disappear by themselves. So the Tao, follow the simile of flowing water downstream. You feel it's going in the correct direction. You feel more peaceful, more happy, more at ease. Other people recognize that as well. You're going in the right direction. That's the way it works. So, thank you for not falling asleep during my meditation, my talk this morning. Sigh. Okay, come try again. Bet the people next door, Andrew's group, jealous. Okay, so tea time, or what else time? Toilet time. Come back in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and we can do a meditation till 11 o'clock. So who's going to do my tea today?